This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Our first guest this morning, Hillary Frank, is a former contributor to This American Life, and she's a podcaster. Her podcast that she founded is called The Longest, Shortest Time Parenting Podcast, which I think is a brilliant title, because parenting, after all, is the longest, shortest time. She says that the best parenting advice that she receives doesn't come from parenting gurus, but from friends and podcast listeners who use their creativity to flee moments of desperation. We've all been there. One mother threatens to sing in public anytime her daughters argue. And then from using the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song, which I remember, to lull a colicky infant, to convincing her kids that Toys R Us is a membership-only club. Parents in Hillary's book are as ingenious as they are eccentric. Her book is Weird Parenting. Excuse me. Weird Parenting Wins, Bathtub Dining, Family Screams, and Other Hacks from the Parenting Trenches. Hillary, welcome to The Mountain Life. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I would say that parenting, of all things, is the thing that we feel the most failure at. And quite often, it's failure time after time after time. But you're talking about the times that we're not failing. We're winning.
Yes. And I think that sometimes things that people classify as fails are actually wins. Like when people are talking about things that they do to get a little me time to recharge, they might classify that as a parent fail. But I think that those are wins, because there's no way you can take care of another human being unless you're feeling kind of centered yourself.
And I can see that the stories just come out of the woodwork when you start talking about this, first on your podcast and even here in the radio station this morning. Someone approached me and told me about the time that she made her grandchildren get out of the car and walk because they were being naughty. And she thought that was a grandparenting win for sure. And I agreed with her.
Yes. And the thing is that a lot of the wins in this book don't come from parents. They come from teachers and babysitters and aunts and uncles.
Hillary, I look at your book as sort of a nice bookend to another book that I've recently read, which is called The Journey of the Heroic Parent. And it's a very serious look at parenting and kind of frames the whole discussion in terms of what you just talked about, the failures being wins, that we all fail our kids because it, by definition, it's not possible to meet all their needs. So once we understand that we're in a context of failure, we can change that to perceiving it differently as, you know, something that we accept and embrace, and that puts us on a positive footing and a new space to have dialogue with our kids. Your dialogue, I mean, I read it sometimes and it's like, is this dialogue that's, you know, manipulating and deceiving, or is this dialogue that is bringing in some element of humor, which then results in this wonderful outcome where the child has a new perspective on the parent?
I mean, I think that kids love to play and they love to pretend. And so some of the things that you might think of as deception and are, you know, white lies, especially with the younger set of children, are tapping into their love of play. And to me, that's a win. You know, like these little white lies of, like, you know, the mom who says, whose kid doesn't like to eat anything that's not takeout, so she cooks homemade food and puts it in Chinese takeout containers, like, that's not going to really hurt him. And then it makes for a good story when he grows up. But I wouldn't advocate for, like, deceiving your children in a serious way, especially as they get older. But I also think that this book, like you said, on the surface seems to be, you know, kind of all silliness and humor. But a lot of the wins are really touching and poignant and are about parents connecting with their children in a really deep way. And I've been communicating with some of the parents over email since the book has come out. And they're telling me that, like, seeing their win printed in a book is just totally validating their parenting style, a thing that they thought they were just, like, throwing together because they were feeling so desperate actually turns out to be a thing that could be useful to other parents and could be classified as good parenting.
Where's the line between good parenting and something that, you know, if you do it and we can call it a win versus, as you said, repeatedly deceiving and manipulating your child? I mean, there's got to be some sort of, you know, DMZ zone in there between manipulation and winning.
I mean, I'm not an expert or a psychologist, so I can't really draw that line. But I think in terms of this book, anything that's done in good fun is I think probably harmless, right? Nothing that we're putting in here I think could be classified as abuse of any kind. It's all just done in good humor to get your kids to go along with you. And like I said, we're not once we get into the older kids, there isn't really deception going on. It's more creatively working with their needs.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Hillary Frank. She is the creator of the podcast, The Longest, Shortest Time Parenting Podcast. And she's back with a new book called Weird Parenting Wins, Bathtub Dining, Family Screams, and Other Hacks from the Parenting Trenches. Hillary, since we brought up putting healthy food into go boxes to appease your picky eater, I just have to say that there was a time when my son was little and he was very interested in the dog food. And so I thought maybe I ought to put his food in the dog bowl and then that would work. And sure enough, you've got a baby in here that wasn't interested in eating, yet she'd eat everything off the floor. So
yeah.
The mom put food on the floor and then she
That's
ate
right.
it.
Human vacuum baby. Did you put the food in the dog bowl?
No, I never did. I thought that would be too weird. But there we go. Weird parenting wins.
Yep.
And then this one I think is particularly funny, and it has to do with chopsticks, because I, you know, at my adult age, I still have a hard time using chopsticks, so I'm surprised that a parent used chopsticks. How did they use them?
Oh, you're going to have to remind me, because there's over 300 wins in here.
There are so many. Well, it just had to do with babies refusing to be spoon-fed, and yet they were very, very interested in chopsticks. Hey, it works.
It does. Yeah, and you see what I mean? Like, this is being creative and playful. It's not going to hurt the kid.
Right, right. And, you know, I'm wondering if this is generational, if it's a sign of the times, are we becoming more creative? Were our parents also creative, or were they more just bottom line? You don't like the food, you go to bed hungry.
Yeah, like Dr. Spock.
I mean, I think, yeah, all parents are different, and we all come at this from different belief systems and different backgrounds. But I think, you know, my mom did something on me where I was not interested in eating. I thought eating was boring. And so she would trick me into eating dinner by calling everything snack. So she would, like, make chicken cutlets for her and my dad, and then she would refrigerate mine and cut it up into little bite-sized pieces and tell me, here's some chicken snack. It's chicken snack. It's not dinner.
Thinking back to the era of Dr. Spock, which was kind of like the guidebook. It was the handbook that every parent used when I think I was an infant and a child. So my parents were relying upon that. And number one, there weren't many resources like a handbook. Today, there are hundreds, if not thousands. And the ones that did exist were pretty rigid. I mean, you know, there was a formula. If you did A, B, and C, you got to D, in theory. And today, I'm sorry?
Even today,
yeah.
I would say that the handbooks are rigid. And I think that a lot of that is responsible for what people call the mommy wars, because you're going to either buy into the technique or not. It's going to work for you or not. And people who for whom it works think that everyone else is doing it wrong if it doesn't work for them. And so it, like, creates these factions.
And there really is no formula. That's what we're sort of being told these days by the more, I guess, progressive or enlightened amongst you.
I mean, I think it's what I'm finding is that it's whatever works. And sometimes things you read in books are going to work for you, and sometimes things you read in books aren't going to work for you, and it doesn't mean that you're a failure or that there's something wrong with you. But what I want parents to do is to trust their intuition a little bit more.
And I'm interested in the title of your podcast, The Longest, Shortest Time Parenting Podcast. How did you come up with that title?
So The Longest, Shortest Time was something that a friend said to me. I had a really rough childbirth and recovery. I couldn't walk for 2 months after I gave birth. And my friend was visiting me, and I said, I just feel like this is my new forever. Mm-hmm. And she said, just remember that this is the longest, shortest time. It's going to feel like it's never going to end. And then you're going to look back on it, and it's going to feel like a blip. And then, and she was right, like that time was finite. But then what I found is that being a parent, because now I have an almost 9-year-old, being a parent is a series of longest, shortest times. You go through one phase, you think you've mastered it, and then you're on to the next struggle.
It is a genius title. The temper tantrum in the grocery store seems like it's taking forever, and yet you turn around and your kids are in college, literally. And so, nothing could be more true. The longest, shortest time. Oh, wow. It's great. You know, there's so much perfectionism that I think pervades the whole parenting arena or attempts at. And then there's what that actually leads to is a feeling of failure. And I'll never forget. I dropped my little baby at the childcare at the health club for a bit. And I left my diaper bag there. When I got back, the person who was tending the daycare, who was also a mom, said, I looked in your diaper bag. You're more perfect than I am. Saw things that made me look like I must have been a good mom. Maybe there was like organic baby food or cloth diapers or something like that. Mm. When in reality, we're all just trying to hold on for dear life. And I think
we're all just winging it.
Winging it. And that was why I thought that it was so sad that parents are, you know, comparing themselves to others.
That mommy war thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate it. And I don't feel it as much now that I don't have a baby. And I'm sure that, like, there's still comparing going on, and maybe it's going on in people's heads. But somehow, I don't know about you, but that, like, overt comparing stopped when my kid wasn't, like, a toddler anymore.
Yeah, you're right. You stop bragging about how your kid sleeps through the night, which mine never did. So I was always on the fail side of that.
And Hillary, is part of the book's goal to address some of that judgment and criticism and acknowledge the fact that, you know, we are all just winging it as parents and there are
absolutely
no formulas?
And yes. And that's like the whole mission of The Longest, Shortest Time, too. I think, like, when I became a parent in 2010, I was seeing a lot of, like, blogs and parenting media that were trying to pit parents against each other by picking one side of an issue or another. And I just can't stand it. And I was like, you know, this is the most vulnerable time in a lot of our lives. And why can't we just be more supportive of each other and accept that we do things differently? And so when I started telling stories about struggles in parenthood, I really had this mission of making the stories diverse so that we could relate to people who are not like us and see that, like, there isn't just one way to raise a kid. There's all these different ways. And I think that because there are hundreds of different wins in this book, it's like, you know, a microcosm of that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. You know, one thing that occurs to me is there's always this realm of good mom, bad mom, but I don't really hear good dad, bad dad. But maybe that's a thing of the past, and these days it's a little more of a shared, you know, categorization. But first of all, you're trying to address the categorization completely about good and bad, and that's wonderful. But is there still sort of a good mom, bad mom versus, you know, no responsibility being assigned to the dad? He just gets to be the dad?
You know, unfortunately, I think that our society generally thinks of parenting as a mom's job, and a lot of that comes out in discrimination at the workplace. Moms are discriminated against more in the American workplace than dads or people without kids. And dads get patted on the back and congratulated for spending time with their kids. So there's this real double standard, and you're right, I don't hear, you know, good dad, bad dad so much, but mostly we're, you know, the stereotype we think of when we think of a parent, I think, is like the frazzled mom trying to quote-unquote do it all.
Yeah. Our guest is Hillary Frank. The book is Weird Parenting Wins. We want to put it out there that we talked a lot about toddlerhood and young parenting, but you also move into your later chapters, you know, into maybe even the teenage and adolescent realm, the art of helping your kid not be a kid, which is a great name for the chapter. One of these in here, and I always wondered about this, you know, making kids go to school day after day after day, and then they have to fake it when they're, you know, when they fake that they're sick when they want to just stay home. One parent gives two mental health days per quarter during high school. And I love that because, you know, as adults, we all have personal days that we take as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, if you're a high schooler and you just need that day and you know your parent's going to trust you to do that, you're not going to fake it probably as much, and you might be able to recharge and get yourself together to go back to school the next day.
Yeah, and it might be that good opportunity to show empathy for your kid that they too have stress and need a break.
And they might be more willing to open up to you as well.
Yeah. And then overall, I think many of us wonder whether or not we give rewards for good grades and whether or not we give allowance for doing chores. And a lot of parents address that in your book, which I love. But my favorite one is if your kid reads an article in a newspaper or magazine, they get, you know, a buck. But and if you bring it up for discussion at the dinner table, you get another buck. And kind of, you know, some goals related to that, writing letters of gratitude and listing all the farms that the vegetables came from. These are great ideas.
Yeah, and that particular mom has a kid who loves to cook. And he's been a guest on The Longest Shortest Time before. And so
wow.
He would use all of the money that he had earned to be able to go buy ingredients, like fancy ingredients for his meals at home. His mom's a single mom, and so she invented this system between the two of them, and he cooks for her.
One of my favorites in that same chapter was the charity jar, having the penalty for various behaviors, and if you violated, you had to chip into the charity jar, and then once or twice a year, everybody in the family got together at the table and decided what charity was going to benefit from their decisions and their behaviors, and it kind of connected in a circular fashion. You know, a lot of really wonderful themes together.
Yeah, this was from a mom who said she was tired of being the nag. And so she just created a system that would completely take her nagging out of it. It was like, all right, you leave your clothes around, you got to chip into the jar.
Oh, so many great ideas.
The mom who didn't want to be a nag, Lynn, did you hear that?
Well, I heard.
What's the fun in that? I mean, nagging's half the fun, at least. No, just kidding.
Hillary Frank, we're so glad that you could join us on The Mountain Life. Now, you're no longer hosting The Longest Shortest Time. Is that right?
That's correct.
But you're
That's
on
right.
it
Andrea
as a guest.
Andrea Valenzi is now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a great podcast, The Longest Shortest Time Parenting Podcast. The book is Weird Parenting Wins, Bathtub Dining, Family Screams, and Other Hacks from the Parenting Trenches. Hillary, it's been a pleasure speaking with you this morning. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters with Daniel Pink, his book, Win, The Scientific Secrets of Timing.
Hi, Dan Dearden here, owner of Just Right Air, sponsor of KPCW programming. Just Right Air has been advising Park City area homeowners to repair, replace, and maintain their heating and air conditioning since 2004. Details at justrightair.com.
Spend the day outdoors at Utah Olympic.